Hi, I'm Chris Plum, head coach and CEO of Cromwell Swim Club. This is the Off the Deck podcast. Off the Deck champions Cromwell Swim Club's mission, teaching excellence through swimming for life. Cromwell Swim Club is building a pool and it is naming it the Cromwell Swim Academy. Cromwell Swim Academy will provide an entry point for more children in central Indiana to have access to life-saving programs. We are compelled to use our expertise in swimming to make our community safer and ensure every child has the opportunity to learn to swim. To learn more, visit www.carmelswimacademy.org. Gain Swimming is also a sponsor of the Off the Deck podcast. Gain Swimming is the gold standard in dry land training. If you are interested in a consultation, please contact Chris Webb at chris@thegainnetwork.com. To learn more, visit www.thegainnetwork.com/gainswimming. And now, let's get on with our show. Okay, welcome to the Off the Deck podcast. I'm your host, Chris Plum, and I'm very excited for today's guest, the one and only Claire Adams. Claire Adams is the only 16-time IHSAA champion. And with girls' high school season starting this week, I figured, like, what a great guest we could have on as the person who never really lost in high school at our state championship. She's also a junior world record holder, an NCAA finalist, and just an amazing person. So, Claire, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I just thought it would be great with the girls' high school season starting this week, you know, bring the person on who went undefeated, never lost. And I wanted to first ask you, of the 16 titles you won, was there any one where you're like, maybe I got lucky or I wasn't sure, or like, was there any ever in question of the 16? And what do you think about it when you look back? 16, you never lost in high school.
Well, there's definitely one race that comes to mind. I'm sure you're probably thinking of the same one.
Yep.
My 200 freestyle, where I missed the turn at the 125, I think
it was the 150.
Oh yeah, 150. The 150, that one where went to push off, thought my feet were going to hit the wall, and was full streamline, dead stop at the wall, and had to really put that one into gear. So I don't know if it's luck or great coaches that made us practice for those scenarios, but that's definitely one that comes to mind where it was I don't know what word to use to describe it, but an unexpected moment, I would say.
Yeah, you know, in many ways, it was kind of like when Phelps won those 8 golds in that first one, they had to come back and have that special Lezak moment. Mm-hmm. When you you obviously hit the wall, right? But with your toe and with one toe, maybe. And the air was sucked out of the building in that moment. But, you know, I know you didn't miss the 7th turn going into the 8th wall, and then you always mm-hmm. figured it out. How to get your hand on the wall. Well, the other thing I was thinking about that too is someone was asking about, you know, your favorite moments as a coach. And I always say a couple things, but one is like moments when people do things they didn't think was possible. But I shared a moment too that really made me proud is when you and Katie were cleaning up the pool deck after mm-hmm. you know, winning a state championship, everyone's gone, and you guys are going on the round picking up trash. So when you think about the things that you learn and the character you kind of developed over time, I mean, that just sticks out to me as like, this encompasses everything we want to be. But where does that come from you? And I don't even know how you got that idea, but I know it just kind of happened. You weren't looking for anything about it, but we all just kind of noticed. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something that being a part of Cromwell Swim Club and Cromwell High School, I was surrounded by a culture where that wasn't like directly a rule of like pick up your trash after a swim meet, but the expectation was that you left the place better than you found it in so many different ways. You left the people better than you found them by being a kind athlete to the other athletes, being kind to the officials, the coaches, saying thank you, just being a generally respectful kid was an expectation on the team. And then leaving the environment better than you found it, that kind of carries over to that as well. So, you know, we tried to be respectful of the fact that when we were at the Natatorium downtown, that wasn't our home facility. And so we were guests, and there were people who came around and they did clean the pool deck, but it wasn't their job to pick up your goldfish that you spilled, you know, while you were waiting to swim your 100 free. That was your job to do that. And so I think there's a line from a book, and I can't remember the name of the book, but I know it's about a rugby team in New Zealand, and it's like sweep the
Sweep the
floor,
sheds.
sweep the sheds. Yeah. And so the sweep the sheds mindset, I think it, like I said, it wasn't an exact rule, but it was a mindset and part of the culture that was expected that you swept up after yourself.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. That you embodied that, and it didn't matter whether you won or lost or whatever, you were always going to make the place better than when you found it. And now that you're living in Denver and you're a teacher, so to me, you're making the world a better place, right? So what, are there things that you've taken away from swimming that you apply to your classroom?
Oh, 100% every single day. I think the biggest one right now is swimming really helped me develop my communication skills and my advocacy skills. And so working with a coach, you know, I have a coach as a teacher, and it's my job to advocate for what I need as an educator, but it's really important that I advocate for my students as well. And so you learn those skills through working with other people on a team. I know sometimes we would all kind of talk and then be like, okay, like who's going to go talk to coach? Those kinds of things. And as a kid, you know, you don't see that as like a down the road kind of thing. But now that I'm like really in the workforce and I am teaching my own classroom and I have my own students that I'm working with every single day, communication is huge. And working, I mean, I'm still working on a team. I work with three other educators every single day. We're the second grade team. And so I need to know how to communicate with them. Like I said, I have to be able to advocate for what I need and for what my students need. And being in a profession where, especially in our current climate with our country, teaching is it's challenging. And it's really important that I have those communication skills, which I think 100% came from being on a swim team, working with coaches, teammates, all those different places where you had to learn to speak up sometimes.
Yeah, and you talk about some of the two hardest people to speak with, Coach Plum and Coach Murray, right?
Sometimes, yeah. I don't know that I was that easy either. So I
That
think
is true. You...
my nickname at one point had the word stoic in it. So
That is for sure. You never knew. Clearly, always walk in very dignified each and every day. So, you mentioned speaking in today or teaching in today's environment, what do you think is the biggest challenge you face in being a teacher in today's world, I guess?
I would say right now, especially as someone who's in their first year of teaching, I'm really feeling the effects of the past 18 months, and what the pandemic has done for our education system and the gaps that we're currently seeing with students all across the country. It's not just my classroom, it's not the one next to me. It's everywhere, and it's across the world as well. Our education has had to adapt and change. But our expectations are still really high, which is really important. But what I'm experiencing right now is there's a really big push to get our kids to where they need to be. But it's challenging to do that at an accelerated pace with the learning loss that occurred over the past 18 months. So trying to get my kiddos to a second grade learning level right now, when I have some kids that weren't in school since kindergarten, is really, really challenging for myself and also for them. Kids are really adaptable and they're really flexible. But I'm learning that it's really important that we give them the space to really process those emotions that they're feeling about being back in the classroom and having longer school days and different environments than what they had from learning at home. So it's a lot of different things that are, some are working for us and some are working against us right now. And it's our job to kind of help our students navigate that.
Yeah. So obviously you got to be adaptable, and you know, it's kind of like, you know, I know in the pool, we're experiencing the same things because for a year, kids didn't have to, you know, or at least in Carmel, they were home every other day. So if they didn't go to sleep the night before, they were taking a nap the next day. So, you know, let's kind of go back in time. How did you first learn or start to swim? What was that like for you?
So I know I started swimming when I was like 2 years old with just like those throw your baby in the pool, teach them how to float kind of classes. And yeah. I know Carmel started to get into that realm of like the really early emergent swim lessons, which is super exciting. That's been like a huge development since I graduated from the program. So I started in a program like that when we lived in Houston. And then I did summer league swimming. And then joined Carmel when I was 9. And that was my first experience in fourth grade with joining a competitive swim team.
Do you have any first memories of when you got in the water, what that was like?
I mean, I remember like Carmel swimming, my first couple practices, doing a lot of T-press and T-roll. Those are like two drills that I'll never forget for some reason. But I think, honestly, I remember more like the team experiences of like summer league swimming, the fun, the excitement, the like eating a pixie stick before your race, those kinds of things, rather than like the practices. It's the, I definitely remember like the relationships and the people a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. We could talk a little bit about that when your high school career, but when you, so you were like one of the youngest people to qualify for the Olympic trials. You were 13. I remember making it, coming off of the trials just recently. What's, you know, I think you have a really funny memory. So can you share some of that first trial memories with us, about especially that, that backstroke experience you had?
You know
which one I'm referring to? Yeah.
I don't know about the backstroke experience. Which one are you talking about?
Well, I remember you kicked butt in the 100 back, and you were like one of the highest placing young people, and then the 200 back, or maybe it was the other way around.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah. That's what I was thinking of, but I wasn't sure. So I did really like way better than I had expected to, since I was so young. It was, I know our expectation was like, okay, it's any other meet, you're going to go and you're going to do what you would normally do. But I wasn't, it's not like I was seated close to being able to make finals or anything. And then I swam the 100 back and I was like a couple places off of making semis, and got really, really excited because I was 13 and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go to the Olympics. Here we go. And then ended up adding like 6 seconds in my 200 backstroke because I just overwhelmed myself with the expectation of like, you're going to make the Olympics now because you almost made semis. And that's, I mean, huge learning moment, especially for a 13-year-old at Olympic trials. But yeah.
Yeah. What, and didn't you like, say, hey, there I am up on the scoreboard.
Oh, and I was swimming the two back and I was looking at myself on the video because they had the big, in the Omaha Stadium, there's that big thing in the middle. And I was looking at myself on the race video while I was swimming, which is just lovely for your head position and backstroke.
Yeah, that's probably not a good sign. This is happening. So, but you know, so, obviously, there's probably a little bit of maybe pressure to deal with, or, you know, when you come out and you're 13, you're kind of like the star, the next rising. How do you felt like you dealt with those expectations going into high school? And then did you feel like, you know, being so good, was there any jealousy you felt with the older girls on teams? I know sometimes that can be experienced out there.
Yeah. So I guess I'll start with like the expectation in general. I mean, I was a kiddo who going through swimming, I was very consistent and I never really hit like a plateau. And that wasn't something that I had to deal with all the way through my high school career, really. And so I felt like my foot was always on the gas and it was constant acceleration to meet that high expectation. And at the time, like being in high school, that was it felt normal and I didn't know anything otherwise. And so it was just constantly pushing, 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 pushing. And at the time, I do think that that was the right thing for me to be doing. And then I kind of felt the effects of that a little bit later on, where I had a moment where my foot came off the gas for a second and it was like the car couldn't slow down and then it finally just crashed. And then as far as like the jealousy kind of thing, I mean, especially when I was a lot younger, like 8th grade, practicing with the high school team, that was challenging just because I'm was 13 and I was swimming with 18-year-olds some days. And I mean, there's people that stick out in my mind, like Lauren Jordan, who was a great role model for me. And I remember like specific conversations I had with her at practices of her reminding me, like, you're here for a reason. You might be in 8th grade and I might be a senior in high school, but it doesn't matter. If you're beating me in practice, you're beating me in practice. And it's my job to, like, as a high schooler, to remind you that you're going to be in this position one day and there might be someone else who's just like you. And you need to do the same thing for them. And so I had both ends of it. I felt like there were some really good moments and some, challenging moments as well. But yeah, it was kind of a mix.
And then, I think you were, to me, you said you put your foot on the gas, but I think we would be remiss not to mention kind of your climb, especially in the national ranks in 2015. This summer you worked really hard. We went to nationals, you're getting recruited by all these schools, and we show up to nationals kind of like I wouldn't say an unknown, but it wasn't like, oh, this girl's gonna make a name for herself. Like, it wasn't like it was obvious at the time, right? So, getting ready for that 2015 nationals and preparing when you did set the junior world record and win two national titles at that meet, what was your mindset going into that meet, and how did you prepare to compete going from, because what I'm trying to get at here is like you're gonna going from like this maybe potential to like, hey, I've arrived and I'm ready to go compete with these girls at this level.
Yeah, so I think like two things come to mind. The first one that I think of in terms of like my preparation for that meet, I was really like honed in, and you and Ian and I, we worked a lot on like my specific race prep plan, and that was like there was no going outside of that. I knew exactly what I needed to do. I was going to do wiffle balls. I was going to do donuts, parachutes. I had a specific on land, like mini bands. Everything was like we had it completely lined out to exactly what it needed to be for me to be physically prepared for those races. And I think that was a huge, like, huge key part of the success at that meet. Because when there's like ambiguity with that race prep and you don't know the consistency and you don't have something to rely on, I think that's where some like anxiety and nerves can start to come in. And I didn't have that, because I knew exactly what my job was leading up to my race. And then I also think about like the mental aspect. So we talked about in 2012, I was 13 going to Olympic trials. I did not think I belonged at that meet. And I had a couple years between then and then now in San Antonio in 2015. And I think that's one of the first times that I truly felt like this is a meet that I belong to be at. I can be successful at this meet, and I am just as fast as these other athletes here. And so I really felt like I had a place at that meet. And I think that's really important in terms of confidence as well, knowing that you belong in a space. Like that's it's so important.
Yeah, and just for all the people out there, I just cannot talk enough about having a pre-race plan, because I just feel like it centers you and puts you in the right place. And I think you're exactly right. It just removes anxiety. If you don't have that plan, anxiety can creep in.
I remember, sorry to interrupt, but
Go ahead.
I
Yeah, I love it.
remember literally having a notebook and I had it exactly written out. And it wasn't written by you and it wasn't written by Ian. It was written by
Yeah,
me. And it was something
right.
that we had collaborated on and that I had practiced at even like the Carmel invite or winter invite, whatever smaller meets, always did it. And so, no, and it was down to like what I was going to eat for breakfast and how long I was going to have before those things. And if I was going to eat a snack before I warmed up. Everything like that in my own handwriting, like I had complete ownership over it. And I think that was a really important part of it as well.
Yeah, so I totally agree. You owned that moment. I mean, obviously it was a team effort, but like when you take ownership of it, when the athlete takes ownership of it, that's when I think those great moments can happen. And you really did. And I know you played with it a little bit and you dialed it in just to get it right. And I just thought it was cool too, is like you took that with you to Singapore. And I know that also helped you because here you are in a foreign country and you might not get to eat this banana for breakfast or whatever you normally have, but you still knew when you went to the pool. Hey, this is how I get in the place I need to be. Did you felt like you were able to take that with you to college, or did things change, or how did you evolve that over time?
So I did. I took it with me to college, and then I kind of got away from it a little bit. And like looking back on it now, I needed that consistency, and I thought that I didn't. And then when I got back to that consistency with my race prep routine, kind of like end of junior year, beginning of my senior year of college, I started to see a lot more success in the pool when it came to my races. So, I did, and then I thought I had grown out of it. And then it's funny, I had to come back to the things that I was doing in eighth grade to be successful as a senior in
Right.
college. So.
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at your 4-year career, you kind of finished going out really strong, and then the pandemic hit, right? You're Big 12 Swimmer of the Year or something like that. I don't know. You've won so many accolades; it's hard to keep track of, Claire. But you know, you go to the conference meet, and it's great, and you're on fire, on top of the world, and then the pandemic hits. You don't get to swim NCAAs, you do the trials, and then unfortunately, it's just bad timing for you. But you know, how have you dealt? And I know you decided to step away at that time. How have you dealt with the emotions of that? I mean, you must be good with it today, but I'm sure that had to be a struggle at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, really challenging, but knowing that I was not alone in that position and knowing that there were other people experiencing the exact same thing as me, I think about like Veronica Birchall, we were in very similar positions. We were having really great senior years, and she decided to keep going, and I decided to step away. And so also knowing that, like, there's swimming, and swimming was my world for so long. But I was also starting to prepare for my world after swimming. And also the fact that the rest of the world was experiencing a crisis like we had never known really put into perspective, it's swimming. You know, this is something that we do, and it's fun and it's enjoyable. And those are all the things that it should be. You should really come back to those like grounding things of like, this is a sport, and sport is fun. It's builds confidence, it builds character, all of those things. And so having that like world, literally worldwide perspective really helped me kind of process through that. The fact that like, okay, this is tough and it's challenging and I'm having to step away from something that I love, but there's so much more going on in the world, and there's also so much more for me after swimming as well, that could be just as exciting.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. I know you certainly were the only one who had to make that decision, and you also feel for the people who, you know, I saw all kinds of swimming happening at trials, like people who came out of nowhere, the young people, and just who knows what would happen if it happened the year before. But you know, you've got to get on with your life and your world, and now you're doing a wonderful job in a wonderful place in Denver, and you know, just kind of like looking back, I know a lot of people out there are like starting to look at colleges and schools like that. What would you go back and tell yourself to that maybe junior, that junior girl, and to look as they're looking, or boy or whatever, looking to the school? What would you tell them?
I think some of the most important advice that I received when I was looking at schools was to make sure that you could see yourself at that school and in that community and that environment, not as a student athlete and just as a student. There's so many unpredictable things, and obviously the goal is to compete all 4 years, and that was absolutely my mindset going in. I wasn't considering like, oh, well, what if? But it is really important that you see yourself there. I lived there as a post grad for a year. In Austin, and I loved the community, and so it made my life post college swimming in Austin really fun and really great because I liked being in the community. And it also like I got to have really great experiences outside of swimming, in the Austin community. And so I think it's really important that you consider, you know, is this just a swimming school for me, or is this a person school for me as well? Because you're going to learn so much about yourself as you go through college and your degree and all those things. Like, do they have those things that supports you as a whole person and not just as an athlete? Obviously, you're a student athlete and you're there to be an athlete, but you're there to develop yourself as a person as well.
Yeah, that's great advice. And the backstroke tradition at Texas is going to continue with Barrett Berglund. He's now a G. Yeah. Well, you know, Claire, records are meant to be broken, and I know we'll see what happens with that record board. I don't know.
Somebody told me the exact same thing my
Oh, good.
year, so I would love to see
That's
it.
right. Oh, that's wonderful. But I know she's very excited, and I know you may have not known, but I know certainly you've had an influence on the backstroke generation. We had two girls make the junior world team in backstroke event. So think about that backstroke tradition is continuing. So, all right. So let's go to have some maybe a little bit lighter questions here. We've dealt with some heavy stuff here,
Okay.
but if you could pick anyone in the world, living or no longer with us, who would you like to do a social kick with?
Oh, probably AOC, as in the politician. I think she's an amazing woman, amazing feminist, and I'd love to sit and pick her brain about what it's like to be such a powerful woman in politics. And then you gotta go with like the greatest of all time, Serena Williams. Like, come on, talk about like amazing, powerful woman. Would love to
Right.
social kick with her as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to play tennis with her, but I'll be happy to
I
social kick
don't even know that I'd want a social kick with her. She'd probably
her.
be faster than me.
What were three songs on your pre-race playlist?
Oh man. I had like an Eminem phase when I was in like 8th grade, which
Okay.
was just so not how I am with music now, which is so funny to me. I can't even think of the one song. Oh, and then that one song that was on the back of our t-shirts that 1 year about
Oh,
the
that Eminem song, that one?
was it
The storm one?
No,
No, okay.
oh man, it'll come to me. I'll think of it. But those
Okay.
two were, yeah.
All right.
Oh
What song would you least like to pop up during a practice?
country music.
Country
I like
music. You
country
went to
music, but
Texas.
not in the context of a swim practice.
Okay.
I like folk music and like calming music outside of swimming, but when I get into
Right.
swimming, there's something about me that's like I want some like intense rap music, which is really,
Yeah,
like I
right.
said, not how
Yeah.
I normally am, but
Great. If you could post a billboard at the pool for everyone to read, what would it say?
probably either something like a joke, something funny that would just make you laugh and smile, or something that was just like it's not that deep. Like, it's just not that deep. Like, you're gonna be
Okay.
okay. It's just not that
Okay.
deep.
All right. All right. Speaking of which, would you rather swim the deep end or shallow end?
Shallow end, because I like to stand. I don't want to have to hang on the wall.
Okay. It's a good answer. Long warm up or short warm up?
Short warm up for sure, and
Sure.
short warm
Yeah.
down.
That I know for sure.
Personally.
Yeah. Personally, yeah. Are you early to the block or last to the block?
Very early, very
Early.
early.
What would be your perfect IM order?
Just get rid of breaststroke.
Yeah, double down on the backstroke.
Everything, yeah, double backstroke, no breaststroke.
Exactly. Would you rather swim in a pool that is too cold or too warm?
Too cold because I can get over like
Cold.
the shivers, but the warm's gonna make me like not feel good, not in
Yeah,
like your stomach. Yeah, no, too cold.
makes you nauseous, right?
Yep.
You go on first in the lane or last in the lane?
Depends who's asking. No. That was something I got in trouble, not in trouble, but I was pushed, I was challenged with a lot. Swimming at Carmel was to swim at the front of the lane. So now I would say swim at the front of the lane, but I swam at the back of the lane for a while there. So
And lastly, what would be your favorite Gatorade color?
blue if it's the drink, but green if it's the chews.
Oh, okay. Green shoes. All right. Well, Claire, thanks for getting on. Anything else you want to tell the audience before we wrap up?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, if you heard barking in the background, that's our new puppy. So, well, she's got Daisy, as in,
Oh, yay.
yeah, a little golden doodle. She's quite the puppy. Sometimes she's wonderful, and sometimes she's nonstop bonkers. So, the life of a dog owner. But
Yeah,
Claire, we
I feel
appreciate
you.
you coming on. This has been fun. Anytime I'm out in Denver, hopefully we can connect.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
hopefully we get to the training center here soon. So,
Yeah, that as well.
all right. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you.